Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. You Catholic girls start much too late. All the sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well will be the one. Well, they showed you a statue, told you to pray. They built you a temple and locked you away. Ah, but they never told you the price that you pay. The things that you might have done. Only the good die young.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Michael Walden. You're listening to Ask the Blood Detective. For those of you new to the show, I am the Director of Nutritional Services at Integrated Nutrition of Mount Kisco. My office is located an hour north of New York City, and what I do there and what I have been doing for the last nearly 27 years of clinical practice is figuring out the individualized needs of those people who seek me out for help. A lot of what we hear in general out there on the radio and in print regarding nutrition and health is sadly far too general, and much of it is actually inaccurate. So what I promise you as a listener to Ask the Blood Detective is integrity in terms of the information I provide and accuracy. So I have been through medical school. I have been through chiropractic school and nutrition school. Even nursing school currently. And I do this to expose myself to new materials, to keep myself at the top of my game. And the reason I mention this to you is because my experience in these different areas of health allow me to provide what I hope is a lot of practical, accurate, and insightful information that you can use as your being your own personal blood detective to forward your health endeavors, to gain your health back, and to help reverse disease or dysfunction that you may be experiencing now that is stealing the very quality of your life away, and also to become a better health advocate. So as your own blood detective, if you have some knowledge and information relative to, let's say, how you can look at your skin and how that can predict everything from certain cancers internally in the body, let alone on the skin surface, but how you can look for signs that can tell you all sorts of things that your regular doctors will very commonly just miss. And if you learn how to look at your body with the blood detective perspective, we'll realize that you can be a better health advocate for yourself. So many patients of mine are upset, sad, confused, even angry because they've had certain health problems and they've gone to, you know, physicians of different types and non-physicians, and they are wondering why these docs do not know about, let's say, nutritional aspects or health aspects of what you can tell by just looking at yourself in the mirror. Everything from skin tags, the color of your skin, the structure of your nails, the appearance of your iris in your eye. There are so many things that give us clues on the surface that together they give a pattern to help you predict and prevent disease potentially, and to uncover hidden disease, because that's what blood detectives do. What I do and what you can do to a large extent is help yourself by having this information. And I wanna thank everyone, though, the listeners out there that have sent me and visited with me and spoke with me about the Ask the Blood Detective show. And you all say the same thing, and I'm very, very touched that I'm being effective for you. And you say to me, you know, every show is like, it raises questions, and I'm fascinated with it, and it is like a university in an hour on the topic, and you understand things on a whole different level. When practitioners have limited education, exposure, and clinical experience, they will necessarily give either wrong information, non-personalized information, inaccurate information, and information that what I would say is far too holistic, meaning that sometimes you can take a holistic philosophy like we should do everything natural and never ever consider, let's say, taking a vitamin pill. I personally think that's a mistake. But my point here is that you can make those decisions. So today's show, we're going to talk about how you can assess your skin, your hair, and your nails. And this is different information than I presented in the prior show. So the first thing I like to say is that, you know, the skin is the largest organ of the body. And when it's intact, when it's healthy, it helps to regulate body temperature. It maintains fluid and electrolyte balance in the body. And skin changes provide important, if not essential, information about a person's health and their well-being, either right now or in the future, as a predictive organ. Emotional stress, systemic disease, certain medications, skin injury, or a disease that can alter the function, appearance, and the texture of skin give essential blood detective clues for you to take action beyond just eat a healthy diet and take these supplements because I heard they were good, and know that you're actually correcting things. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to jump around talking about changes in the skin and what they mean from a health perspective, a disease perspective, and a nutritional perspective. And I'm probably going to jump from skin to nails to eyes, that sort of thing. I know you'll find it interesting and fascinating and very practical. Many of you will take this information and you will seriously look at yourself, and you will uncover disease, and you will doubt whether or not you're correct. And some of you will see me, you'll see other practitioners, but you will find things. And that's what this is about, you being able to look at yourself, recognizing, first of all, that visual clues are just as valuable or even more valuable in many ways to certain types of lab tests. And I'm saying that as the self-proclaimed blood detective. Okay. So let's talk about the eye. You know, the process of aging, you know, clearly begins at birth. And as changes in the body progress with aging, the skin undergoes age-related changes in its structure and in its function. If you look at your eye in the mirror, what you'll see, or what you might see, is something called arcus senilis. So arcus senilis is an age-related problem where there's a white, gray, or blue opaque ring near the cornea. If you don't know what the cornea is, just look it up on the computer so you'll know what the cornea is, so you can check your eye. And it's commonly called a peripheral corneal opacity because it looks opaque gray, white, or blue. It can also look white. And this is generally present at birth, but then it fades. But it very commonly presents in the elderly. And it also can be an indication of high cholesterol. So your blood work could be perfectly normal, but if you have arcus senilis, you might need more specific types of blood fat tests to confirm you have high cholesterol. Or, by the way, you may not have any other test signs of high cholesterol. You might just have arcus senilis. And I would suggest if you do have that, then you seriously consider that you have excessive lipid deposits, because that's what the arcus senilis is. Basically, there is or are fats that accumulate in the corneal margin of the eye. And sometimes arcus senilis is confused with another very useful visual sign that you can see in the eye, where it reflects, it's called limbus sign, which is different than arcus senilis, but limbus sign reflects calcium deposits in the eye rather than lipid deposits. So here's the thing. The body has too many lipids floating around. Lipids are fats, either from diet and or genetics or a combination. Your body needs to stick them somewhere. It might stick them in your eye, and then you'll have arcus senilis, which means you're at increased risk of cardiovascular disease. Your body doesn't know where to stick the fat. And also, with limbus sign, remember that's calcium deposits in the eye rather than lipids? which is the arcus inellis, but limbicine, by showing that there's calcium, will show up in the mirror as a milky precipitate, because calcium is white. So there'll be an abnormal white color at what's called the corneal limbus of the eye. So that is right at the front of the eye. Again, Google corneal limbus so you can see a picture of it, and you'll be very surprised to see if you have it. Now, the problem with that is if you have calcium depositing in your eye, you almost certainly have calcium depositing in other places, like maybe your breast tissue. That's called calcium-laden breast cysts, which are very strong determinants of breast cancer and chronic inflammation. And calcium is attracted to that inflammation, so the calcium deposits can show up in the breast. Or calcium deposits can, or I should say and or, not only appear in the eye as the corneal limbus sign that you see in the mirror, but that calcium has to come out of your bones, right? So you might have bone loss. You might have either osteoporosis or osteopenia, and you might have an increased cardiovascular disease if you have this sign as well. Remember the corneal limbus sign of calcium, a milky white appearance in the eye, that is associated with hardening of arteries, because calcium deposits in arteries and hardens them. And you could notice all of these problems simply because you saw the corneal limbus in the eye. So let me say this again real quickly. If you lose calcium in bone, you have osteopenia or osteoporosis. That is associated with corneal limbus, because corneal limbus means you have calcium depositing in the eye. So it's coming out of the bones, it's going in the eye, and it's hardening arteries, and it can go in the breast tissue, and it even can go into joints, causing arthritis. Isn't it amazing how a tiny little thing like that in the mirror that you can notice in 2 seconds can predict problems that your lab test may never show, or other sorts of tests like x-rays that might show degenerative joint disease, which are calcium deposits, or tests of arterial stiffness that prove that calcium is deposited in your blood vessels, and imaging techniques like DEXA scans, which I don't like to use. They provide irradiation to the body to measure bone density. I use sonogram. I use sound waves. But my point is calcium deposits in different areas, and you call it something different. Now, I started off by mentioning the skin. I want to say that the skin and its health determine how the body balances water and electrolytes. And if you pull on the skin out, like let's say you take your fingers and you pinch skin right in the middle of your chest and you let it go, pull it out like, you know, as far as it'll go, then let it go, it'll recoil either very slowly or very fast. If it recoils, if it snaps back, that's what recoil means, very fast, that means you're well hydrated. But if it goes very slow, that generally means you're dehydrated. And that could be a more accurate way of figuring out dehydration than a blood test. And of course, the skin helps the body maintain its temperature regulation. So if you have a problem with skin, your body might not hold on, let's say, to metabolic heat. So you might have symptoms of hypothyroid simply because you have a problem with your skin. Okay? It's amazing. And of course, the skin is needed for vitamin production. Yep. You already know this. You know that vitamin D is produced in the skin based on certain wavelengths of UV light from the sun. When it hits the skin, the body will turn cholesterol in the skin right into vitamin D. By the way, for those of you who are wondering, you can almost never fix your low vitamin D levels on blood with sun exposure. It's hard enough doing it with supplements, but it is doable. It's not enough for you to just take a vitamin D supplement once you were told you have low vitamin D or vitamin D3. You have to recheck the test and make sure that your level is high normal. You notice I didn't say normal. The range of vitamin D is 30 to 100. Some doctors will ignore the test if you're 30, if you're 31, if you're 40, if you're 50. But studies of vitamin D show that the higher normal your vitamin D, the lower your risk of dying of anything. because vitamin D is needed for every single cell, and that's not true of most other vitamins. So the skin is needed for vitamin synthesis. So as a person ages, either naturally, whatever that is, or disease, the skin, which is called the epidermis, it decreases in its thickness. It becomes more transparent, and fragility sets in there. And that means the skin is less effective for keeping bacteria out, and it's not as effective when it's thin and fragile for dealing with proper skin friction. So skin tends to break down, which causes heat loss from the body, at which disturbs the body's temperature regulation and could have an effect upon your metabolic rate, how you burn calories even. And when the skin is aged this way, it becomes excessively dry. And nutrition for the skin could be anything, but protein is certainly needed for improving skin health. And in the elderly, because they malabsorb so badly and they have reduced appetites in general, I always will, in addition to looking at their diet and making certain doable changes, I'll almost always recommend a nutritional drink. What I use for overall skin health and protein need in any health problem that I deal with in my practice is I use my Detox 5 product, which is an organic, non-GMO, and a non-animal form, obviously, of proteins. And then I base the dose either at 1 to 2 scoops per day for the average patient, mixed with water to taste or in a fruit smoothie. Or more accurately, I base all of the nutritional advice I give on people, particularly protein needs, after I do a body composition, which I've mentioned in other shows. That's a test that tells me metabolic rate. If I don't know a person's metabolic rate, how can I know what doses of supplements or foods to give them? The answer is you can't. It's unbelievable how often this is omitted with people's health workups. All right, let's get back to the skin, which we can help with proteins. The skin requires vitamin D. The amount you need is the amount you need. Okay, I can't know. The skin needs vitamin A. The skin needs zinc. I do what's called a zinc taste test with my patients, where I give them some zinc sulfate liquid, and if they don't taste it, that means they're deficient. Zinc is needed for cell production. If you lack zinc, or if you have normal levels of zinc and normal levels of D and normal levels of vitamin A and normal levels of vitamin C and normal levels of fatty acids, you can still have all these skin and eye and nail breakdown signs simply because you didn't take what you needed to take. So many patients of mine visit me for the first time, and this is really astounding to me. They are clearly making amazing efforts. They're taking nutrients, but they take doses that couldn't possibly work. Unbelievable. This is not their fault. They've never been properly educated about how to use the right supplements and foods. When the skin ages, it reduces its ability to manage what are called the melanocytes. So melanocytes provide the skin color. And when that function is reduced, there's an increased risk for sunburn, and then obviously an increased risk of skin cancer. So we need to watch our nutrition, and we of course need to wear hats, natural sunscreen, protective clothing, avoid sun exposure, particularly from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And then as the skin ages, you can see pigments. These are like brown spots, what they call aging spots. Remember those? And basically, they're called liver spots or age spots. So you want to keep track of these pigmented areas because they can become skin cancers like melanoma. And it's also been demonstrated that when you have brown spots like on your hands or anywhere else, that means you have increased production of brown spots in your brain. These brown spots are parts of the skin that are oxidized. That means they're aged. That's what oxidation is. It's like putting a raw egg in a frying pan and turning up the heat. The heat is oxidation and the egg is you. The better your nutrition is balanced so that you can repair faster, so the repair exceeds the oxidative disrepair for the skin or any organ, the better off you're going to be. And importantly, as a person ages, they'll have decreased vitamin D production, which means they have an increased risk of bone softening, which is called osteomalacia, as well as osteopenia, which is like a precursor to osteoporosis. It just means a slightly less bone loss. And then also, as we age, some of us more than others, there's decreased blood flow to the skin, which means the skin can be very susceptible to dryness. So excessive dryness of skin could actually be from what's known as decreased dermal means skin blood flow. And most doctors do not get this, which means we would have to use nutrition and lifestyle to manage your blood flow, which will help your dry skin when most people are just putting moisturizer on their skin or taking fatty acids, which is important, but it may not be enough. And what happens to the skin too, which you can see in the mirror, is there'll be a degeneration of what are known as elastic fibers, which means the skin becomes harder. And think about it. When we're born, and when we die, we're stiffs. The truth is we become more stiff. All of our organs, every cell, every tissue, every organ system becomes stiff, and it doesn't work as well. So any approach that I have to patients that I work with always starts with assessments of loss of elasticity of body tissues. I use blood vessels as an example. By the way, I'm not talking about a plaque. I'm talking about literal hardness of the tubes, which can be reflected in hardness of the skin. So if you have degenerated elastic fibers, you will have decreased tone in your skin, decreased elasticity in your skin. And that might mean that you have decreased elasticity in every organ. So if you improve the elasticity and tone of your skin, you improve your overall health. Here's something you've never heard of, probably. There's something that is considered a very benign, you know, non-malignant formation of blood vessels on the skin. They're called, you know, the capillaries. And when you see this, they're called cherry hemangiomas. I'll say that again. They're called cherry hemangiomas. And they appear as little red dots on the skin. And they're, again, they're considered benign, except they may also indicate problems with vascular health. And these hemangiomas, I believe, are related to what is called a cherry angioma, not a cherry hemangioma, but now we're talking about a cherry angioma, and they will look like red circles on the skin, and they have a blood vessel sort of look to them, and they are thought to be caused by abnormal proliferation of blood vessels, so abnormal blood vessels at the top, and very common and passed over by many doctors, except abnormal blood vessel formation clearly is a health risk factor for cardiovascular disease and other health problems. So overall, by the way, when we're talking about any skin problem, protein deficiencies very commonly lend to all of these things. And that can be checked through body composition, blood testing, and by looking at someone. Vitamin deficiencies, obesity, all increase the risk of various skin lesions and healing. If you, by the way, have a very low-fat diet, that actually can be worse for you. That could lead to many vitamin deficiencies and skin changes, but not just skin changes. Remember, the skin, the eyes, the nails, they reflect deeper problems in the body. Even simple hydration or dehydration will influence overall, not just skin health, but functional status of the entire body. Every cell needs water. Doesn't matter if you drink a lot of water. If you don't have proper mineral or electrolyte balance, if you don't have proper protein balance, you can actually promote dehydration by drinking a lot of water. So when you look at yourself in the mirror, you want to start by looking at your scalp. Is it dry, which reflects like dandruff, which reflects deficiencies of essential fatty acids, perhaps vitamin A and vitamin D need? Look at your hair. Look at your nails. Look at the mucous membranes in your mouth. And look for any changes in color or vascularity, like those cherry hemangioma spots. Look at in the mirror for, does the skin look moist? Do you look swollen? Are there any obvious skin lesions you can see? Is the skin breaking down? These are all very important signs of problems. I guess any show that is professing to talk about the health or being a health predictor for disease has to include talking about, at least for a few minutes, about skin cancer. So if you see a lesion on your skin, something that you just know is not there, you have a bad feeling about it, or it just, it doesn't look good, you want to assess it in what's called the ABCDE order. ABCDE. A is asymmetry. What's the shape of it? Is it round? Is it irregular? Does it have a border around it, the periphery of it? Is it irregularly shaped? So A is for asymmetry of shape. B is for border irregularity around it. C is for color. Does it change color? That's bad. Does it look like a different color compared to maybe other similar lesions might be on your back or on your chest? Like those brown spots, they might be precursors to melanoma. If the growth, no matter what it looks like, if that discoloration is greater than 6 millimeters, it's probably bad, and then you need to have a dermatologist look at it. So A is asymmetry of the shape, B is the border regularity of what you're looking at, C is the color variation within that lesion you might see, D is the diameter. Is it greater than 6 millimeters? If it is, go to the dermatologist. And E of the ABCDE, is it evolving or changing in its shape, its size, its color? Is it itching? Is it bleeding? Is it crusting? Very, very important signs. Is your skin shiny and kind of tight, let's say, maybe on your face, on your hands? That's edema, or swelling of fluid, retention of fluid. And edema will cause the skin to appear shiny and, like it was very tightly stretched. It'll usually be paler as well. And edema can be caused from everything from cardiovascular disease to hypothyroidism to electrolyte imbalances to kidney problems. So you see how a small thing like edema, if I examine someone who is, let's say, sitting down and I think they have legs swelling, I would put my thumb at the top, at the bottom of the knee, actually, in a place called the tibial tuberosity, and I push on that. And as I push in for about 5 seconds and let go, if there's still an indentation, the person has swelling. That could be from a vein problem, what's called venous insufficiency, which can, lead to clots, which again can be caused by heart problems, lung problems, kidney problems. See, swelling can be caused by all of those things. And what about if someone has pale skin? That may indicate that the individual does not have enough hemoglobin in the body, which is a component of red blood cells. So if someone has pale skin, we call that pallor, they do not have normal blood flow to the skin potentially, which means, why wouldn't they have normal blood flow? Maybe their blood vessels are squeezing down tight. They're constricting. That's called vasoconstriction. So the blood, which is red, can't get to the skin. So the person's skin color is pale. And that could be at the mucous membranes in the mouth. They may look very pale. The nail beds or the area around the nail may be pale. The palms of the hands, the soles of the feet. The lips may look pale. Or just overall, a person looks pale. That could mean that someone has an anemia, meaning iron deficiency anemia. They might have blood loss from, let's say, cancerous bleeds in their colon, causing them to be pale. Or they could have internal hemorrhoids or external hemorrhoids, or they may have heavy menstruation, losing of iron, and or their diet is insufficient, can cause pallor. And white skin can also mean the person has edema, like we just spoke about, which is swelling. I mean, they could be an albino, but we're talking super white in that case. Now, the skin can also be, you want to look at it for the color when you look at yourself in the mirror. Then once you start practicing this on people, you're going to be able to pick out diseases all around you. It'll be a little scary, but you'll be able to do something about yourself at least. If you're yellow-orange kind of, and I see a lot of people that their skin is like tinged yellow-orange, it can mean that there's an increased level of what's called bilirubin in the blood, causing the skin to be yellow-orange. And we call that in medicine jaundice. And that could be from liver problems, liver breakdown, a liver disease, everything from cancer to hepatitis. But it can also mean that there is something in the body causing red blood cells to break down. Think of a red blood cell as a red dish. If you break it, you release the bilirubin, which is yellow-orange, and your skin would look yellow-orange. Very serious. When you have carrot juice, for example, that also may color the skin yellow-orange. And the difference between yellow-orange skin, which could mean liver problems or breakdown of red blood cells, would be that the whites of the eyes are still white if the yellow-orange skin is from carrot juice. So carrot juice will not affect the whites of the eyes, but breakdown of red blood cells and liver diseases do affect the eyes. They become more yellow, and the skin becomes more yellow-orange. And the yellow-orange from the carrots is because of the carotene in it, okay? And there could be increased carotene, by the way, not just from drinking carrots or eating carrots. It could also be from thyroid disease, hypothyroidism, low thyroid. It could be from diabetes and even a kidney condition called chronic kidney disease or uremia will cause yellow-orange skin. Pregnancy can do that as well. And what if the skin is overly red? Well, that usually means there's an increased blood flow to the skin. Why would there be increased blood flow? Again, this is the connection between the skin and what it could mean in the rest of the body. So red skin, which is called erythema, fancy term for red skin, that basically means the person has a generalized inflammation going on in their body, and that causes inflammation of the skin. That's called erythroderma, or red skin. So that means there's a serious, chronic, low-grade, or not-so-low-grade inflammation that needs to be dealt with. A person can also have red skin from, you know, sunburn or trauma or rashes, or just localized inflammation. Fever will cause red skin, increased alcohol intake, exposure to cold, heart and lung diseases will do it. And then the skin sometimes can have a blue look to it. If the skin has a blue tinge, that's almost always a cardiopulmonary, heart, lung disease. And also a condition called methemoglobinemia, where methemoglobin, a type of hemoglobin, deposits or is produced excessively in the blood and the skin looks blue. So then you can treat those issues. But also with blue skin, a person might have low platelets, which is a very serious problem because that could the person could suffer from a stroke. And you might say, blue, it's like me telling you about a new car. You've never seen it or heard of it. And then I tell you about it, like blue skin, and then you start to see it on people. You'll see it, maybe even on yourself. Blue skin can also be caused by problems with the blood vessels. They're just too fragile. So that might mean that you might need more vitamin C and phytonutrients like bioflavonoids and quercetin and hawthorn, for example. Whatever you need to improve the strength of your blood vessels. And the skin could be brown. Brown-colored skin in a white individual could be from chronic inflammation, exposure to sunlight, also from deficient adrenal function. So low adrenal function could cause the skin to get brown because of certain chemicals that are put off by the stressed adrenal glands. And then, of course, on your skin, you can have different kinds of growths, or what we call lesions, like freckles. So they're like little flat moles, and they don't mean much. We don't think they do. And there could be what are called lipomas, which are fatty tumors in the skin, which means the body is not handling fats well. Doctors will do nothing for these lipomas unless they squeeze on something in your body that then hurts you. Then they might remove them or drain them, but they don't commonly go after the cause of these lipomas, which again are fatty tumors. A lot of people have them on their sacrum, that's the bone at your butt, but they could be anywhere scattered throughout the skin. And then a person might have vitiligo or cafe au lait spots where the skin has these brown spots. That can mean oxidative stress, folic acid deficiency, stomach acid deficiency. There's so many things that you can find. You can have scales on the skin or dermatitis or psoriasis, which means increased fatty acid levels. There's allergies, there's immune problems. You need certain nutrients for immunity. And then these scales can go away. It's amazing how much, it's just so much you can tell by looking at yourself in the mirror and looking at others. So, you know, I said that skin can look inflamed. And that could be maybe because there was trauma to that area of the skin, or there may be a heart disease problem called congestive heart failure that'll cause swelling either on the face, in the body. Your hands might feel tight, like can't quite close them right. Swelling of the skin could be from kidney disease, which is an oxidative problem at the very least. It can throw off your acid and your base in the body. So when people say to me, oh yeah, I'm gonna eat, you know, alkaline foods or what have you, most of the time these individuals have no idea that they're not changing their pH at all. You need to do that possibly, but if you have kidney disease, here's my point. The kidneys control acid-base balance in the body. So you might need nutrition for your particular kidney disease, not eating away that, you know, the foods simply are alkaline in a laboratory. Everything you know about a food being either alkaline or acid is what was determined in a laboratory when they dissolve these foods into water, generally speaking, and they stick a pH stick in it. But that's a far cry from the body. And, you know, the skin could be increased in moisture. People say, yeah, my hands are always wet or have you, you know, what have you. Or generally speaking, my skin is just moist. That could mean that the nervous system is overactive. They call that autonomic nervous system stimulation. And I check that in the office and it helps me idealize lifestyle plans and nutrition for the nervous system. And people can be prone with this autonomic nervous system problem. The person generally will have moist skin or very wet hands, and they generally suffer from anxiety. They might also have an overactive thyroid causing and contributing to this wetness, moisture of the skin, plus they're suffering fluid loss through the skin this way. Or the person might have a low thyroid problem, or it might not mean anything. That's why it's important to look at all of these different things that you see together. And, you know, sometimes if there's too many of them, then you seek out someone that knows these areas like myself or someone similar that can put it all together. The temperature of the skin, let's move to that. Mostly people tell me they have decreased body temperature. And that can mean that they just have decreased blood flow to the skin. It doesn't mean that they have hypothyroidism, but they might. But they might have a problem with their nervous system, because the nervous system controls the blood flow to the skin. Or the skin could be, the temperature could be decreased because the person has chronic inflammation. Or there might be a vascular problem, not enough blood flow to the skin, so the temperature is lower. If the temperature of the skin is hot all the time, the person usually is in a hyper-metabolic state. That might go with OCD types of behaviors or other diseases. The point of me mentioning that is, OCD stuff, is that there are emotional and there are physical causes of all these sorts of changes in the skin. So let's move to your nails, okay? So if you have a problem with your nails, that's called dystrophic changes. So the nails may have, the nails could reflect, I should say, very serious systemic illness or just local disease at the nail. And again, if I had a nickel for every time that someone had obvious signs of disease in their fingernails and their fingers and hands, I'd be retired. It's really sad. Doctors are not paying much attention to these things. So that means you need to do it. So we're gonna talk about the fingernails and the toenails for their color, their shape, their thickness, their texture, and if there are any lesions present. So let's talk about the nail color. What if your nails are on the white side? You know, they call that horizontal white banding. There may be like opaque, sort of eggshell kind of like coloring in the skin. And that could be from chronic liver disease having white fingernails or kidney disease. It could be from anemia, which is deficiency of iron. It can be from blood flow problems. It can even mean that the person's had a heart attack when they have white fingernails or toenails. if the toenails or fingernails are yellow brown colored, then the person might have jaundice, which means too much bilirubin in the blood depositing itself in the nail beds. It could mean an early sign of psoriasis. It could mean diabetes, heart failure, long-term use of certain antibiotics like tetracycline. It could mean nothing. That's why all of these things must be looked at together. What if the nails are red? Well, that could mean the person has a very serious infection of the heart called bacterial endocarditis. You don't want to see red nails unless you've finger painted them. A person might have an infection called trichinosis. Maybe it was just you smashed your finger and you had some trauma. That could be too. But also, red nails can mean you're suffering from a heart deficiency or a condition called polycythemia vera. Now, if your nails are blue, you might have a problem with your respiratory system, and meaning that your oxygenation is very low, so your nails will be blue. You know, when I draw blood on patients, sometimes the blood is very bright and sometimes it's very dark red. It means simply this. The darker red means there's not enough oxygen. It can reflect all kinds of health problems. And if it's brighter, then that means the oxygen is probably normal. If there is thickness of the nail, then that might mean there is fungal infection in the nail. And antifungal drugs are not very effective at all. And every practitioner who does prescribe them or could prescribe them knows that they're highly toxic and almost never work for fungal infections. Now, let's talk about the hands. There's something called clubbing of the fingers. So clubbing is when you have an increase of thickness and growth of the skin just below your nail. So there's the top of your nail where you cut it, meaning you clip it. And then there's the other side of the nail that's in your skin. I'm talking about that side of the nail, the one that's in your skin and the skin that abuts it right there. If that gets thick, that could mean that there's lung disease. It could mean, therefore, there's not enough oxygen, and it changes the skin growth on the fingernails. Now, these are all basic things taught in every medical school and nursing school, for example. All these health implications, all these health clues that could be seen just by looking at your body. And as this gets thicker and thicker, the skin changes at the base of your nail. That can mean that, you know, you just had oxygen delivery problems for a long time. Diseases, lung diseases like emphysema, which reduce delivery of oxygen to the body, will be associated with this nail clubbing happening. There could be a disease called cystic fibrosis or just chronic heart disease that can cause this. Now, there's another change in the nails where the nails kind of spoon in. You know what I'm talking about? So nail spooning can be caused by iron deficiency. And the iron deficiency may not show up on a blood test. But this spooning also can be caused with poorly controlled blood sugar problems like diabetes. It might mean there's psoriasis. There might be chemical irritants causing it. So all of these causes can cause the nail spooning phenomenon. And then once you address them relative to other skin problems, you can come up, or whatever health provider you're working with can come up with a comprehensive plan that manages all of those things together. And then there's something called a horizontal depressions, where you look at your nails and you literally have like depressions, like a line. And that's caused because the nail plates did not grow properly. That could be from acute or severe illness of any type that can cause this horizontal depressions. They're called Bowes grooves, by the way. And also malnutrition, prolonged periods of malnutrition or malabsorption could cause the horizontal grooves in the nails. And it'll be on all your nails, by the way, of your hands. And then you can have in your nails something called pitting, where it looks like little indentations or little dot indentations are caused right in the nail plate. And that's very common in psoriasis and also hair loss. Interesting, right? And all of these problems I'm mentioning have their nutritional associations. And all of these visual signs, they get differently challenging for the person to look for them if they have dark skin. So dark skin individuals, you know, it's very different. For example, that if there is dry mucous membranes, the skin in African American people, for example, would be more like an ash gray color. So, or it might have a bluish tinge to it. So it's just, you need some training with some of these different things. So I hope that you've got a strong sense now of how valuable it is to take your own health in your hands. And again, I know that you, if you're listening to the show, you're already of that mindset. And you want to maintain that holistic mindset, meaning if you look at yourself in the mirror or look at another person and you see some dry skin on the face and you see some swelling, the eyes, the eye sockets are deeper in because there's swelling in the face and there's bumps on the back of the arm called vitamin A or thyroid bumps. And my point is, when you put all this together from a holistic perspective, you can see so much. You can get so many connections going that it's very easy most of the time to predict the health problem the person has, even though they've been suffering from it or been plagued by it for years and years in just a few seconds. Now, for those of you who want more information on visual signs of disease in the mirror, I have two other shows on this posted up, readily accessible to you. You can get them also from on my blog at www.integratednutritionny.com, integratednutritionny.com, under the blog section. All the radio shows are there, and you'll find them by just scrolling down. Send me your questions. Some of you will send me photos and things, but I can't really provide health advice without seeing you, because pictures do not necessarily tell 1,000 words. And I like to compare the conversations I have with people, the questionnaires, my blood detective longevity questionnaires, any laboratory testing or other assessment tests, along with a visual health inspection. That's what you're doing for yourself. Now, let me give you a couple more examples of things I've talked about on previous shows to kind of tie it all together. All day long, I'm walking around and I'm noticing that there are individuals that have deep creases in their earlobe. And some of you were emailing me how surprised you were to learn from me that this diagonal earlobe crease, it's diagonal earlobe crease, look it up on Google, you'll see a picture of it. It is the most predictive finding of cardiovascular disease. And that crease is an infolding of the skin on the earlobe, right? When you think about it, if there's a crease, that means the skin's infolded. That happens in part due to blood supply issues at the earlobe because of hardening of the arteries, arterial sclerosis, atherosclerosis, heart disease, and vessel disease. Even if you fix those diseases, the crease will never go away, but it is a very important thing to see. So if someone has a diagonal earlobe crease, and if they have dry skin, which can mean fatty acid deficiency, that will increase risk of cardiovascular events. And what if I look at the nails, and the nails are very thin and they have horizontal ridges on them or white spots, which can mean protein deficiency, could also mean zinc deficiency. It just enhances the overall risk of disease that is there, the probability that it's there. And some of these other findings will go away when you correct the nutritional problem. And remember, you are not what you eat. You are what you absorb from what you eat. But we won't leave it there. Remember, this is the blood detective. We don't leave things surface here. We need to think about it. So let me repeat it and then add on to it. You're not what you eat. You're what you absorb from what you eat. Every time I say that to a person, they say, oh, of course. See, I don't want you to take my word for anything. I want you to get the logic to say, oh, well, that's obviously so. Now, you're not what you eat. You're not what you absorb. And you're also what you do not activate. So when you eat something and it's absorbed in your body, your liver has to activate those nutrients and transform those proteins, carbs, and fats. So there is what you eat, what you absorb, and what you activate. And if you have problems with any one of those or a combination of those things, any nutrition problem or any degenerative stress can show up as changes in your skin and changes in your nails, changes in your eyes, all over the place. Even the wax in your ears tells you something about nutritional needs. If you have excessively dry earwax, you may very well have a fatty acid deficiency. Now, if you're saying to yourself, well, I take flax oil, I take omega-3 fats or what have you, but if you still have dry earwax, you're not taking enough, or the stuff you're taking is junk, particularly if you've been taking it for a while. A lot of these omega-3 fat supplements are mercury contaminated, so I obviously don't use anything that is mercury contaminated. Let me mention another interesting sign, and that's, you know, the skin tag. You know, a skin tag is considered, you know, it's like a soft skin growth, and it's got a stalk to it. It's got something from the skin to this, from the surface of the skin to the skin tag. That's called a stalk. They can be pretty annoying, actually, but they're not thought by regular physicians to mean much. But if you dig deep, skin tags could represent that the person is growing these benign skin tags on the surface, but they may be growing benign growths in other places of the body. And some benign growths can become malignant growths. It depends. But also, I have found that skin tags may be associated, or new skin tags, with blood sugar problems, particularly elevated blood sugar, hyperglycemia, and or just outright diabetes or pre-diabetes. You know, the blood sugar spectrum is normal blood sugar, normal glycemia, then it's hyperglycemia, and then if it gets too hyper, they call it pre-diabetes, and finally the hemoglobin A1C blood test, you know, goes over 7.2%, and then the person is said to have diabetes. As if somehow the person just got a blood sugar problem when they were diagnosed with diabetes. Obviously, from this example, you can probably imagine, like just about every other health problem, is that it doesn't just pop up out of nowhere. It's had a chronic course, which could have lasted several weeks, several months, several years. And the damage to body tissues has occurred over the course of that time. Most of the damage in the body caused by any disease that you've ever heard of, multiple sclerosis, heart disease, diabetes, for example, arthritis, anything inflammatory, anything autoimmune, did not just happen when you found out about it, either yourself or from a doctor. It's had its course. And most of the damage, it's like most of the iceberg, 90, 95% of it, has occurred prior to the diagnosis. So people are understandably confused by this. And they'll say to me, Dr. Walt, I don't understand. I was healthy all my life, and then this happened. I said, well, you may have been healthy, and I'm sure you are in some aspects, but this problem did not just pop up overnight. You just were unaware of it, and your doctor was unaware of it too. But it's here now. I've had many examples of people that have come to see me who had no health problems at all and then suddenly get cancer diagnoses. Now, what that means, at least on one level, is the immune system has been disrupted for quite a long time. And the immune system, when it surveilled the body, missed some abnormal cells. And they could have been cancer cells. And in this case of cancer, they would be cancer cells. And then when the immune system over years or months can't manage, is not working properly, then finally someone gets a notification from the body that they have cancer. Maybe they get back pain from prostate disease or metastasis of cancer to their lumbar spine, which is the low back. They might have any sort of abdominal disease, kidney cancer, colon cancer, ovarian cancer, renal disease, and The problem with these organs is that when they get cancer, they have a very different nerve supply, such that when there's cancer forming there, you don't feel it necessarily until it is so out of whack and has progressed so much that it's pressing on other tissues that do have the kind of nerve supply that finally triggers your brain to say something is wrong. So the first thing I would suggest to everyone out there is to begin to look at all of your health problems as a holistic endeavor, meaning they are all connected. You might have a problem like psoriasis, which your dermatologist says is a skin problem, and then you might have arthritis, which your rheumatologist or internist says is a joint problem, or you might have gastrointestinal problems that your internist, primary doctor, or your gastroenterologist says is a gut problem, but that's all artificial. Compartmentalizing the body is only done because this is very hard stuff to understand, and medical schools compartmentalize learning. The problem with that structure, one of the problems with that structure of education, is that it produces a wrong way of looking at the body. To disconnect body systems is entirely artificial because all of the body systems are the same. One of the problems in traditional medicine, in my view, and even in many holistic circles where they give lots of lip service to holistic, but they don't see the connections between problems. So for example, if someone has an immune problem, we have to realize that about 70% of the immune system is in the small intestine. But now we're in the gastrointestinal area. So that isn't that different? Well, clearly no, because if there's a problem with the immune system in the small intestine, it could result in psoriasis on the skin. See, but the dermatologist who deals with psoriasis could care less about the gut. So the structure of medicine has it such that doctors are referring patients all over the place so physicians can look at bits and pieces of the body. And most of these physicians, and I'm not saying this has anything to do with their intelligence or their well-meaning, you know, oath that they took to help people, but they're not seeing things as they are. All of your health problems are connected simply because they're all in your physical body, number one. That's just like romper room, basic stuff. And again, any separation is artificial. When people present to me with all these different problems, seemingly different problems, when you see them together at the same time, for example, I'll give you one more example, common one. Person will say to me, yeah, I'm overweight, I have a little fatty liver, or my cholesterol or triglycerides or LDLs are elevated or my HDL is low. So I know I have cardiovascular risk. And then they'll say, oh yeah. And then I'll say, what has your blood pressure been like? And they'll say, oh, it's good. It's good. I said, well, have you been told if it's borderline? He said, oh yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. Mm-hmm. I said, okay. So you have high blood fats and your blood pressure is borderline. Have you ever been told that you have a blood sugar problem? And they might say, no. And then I look at their testing and it's there. Or they say, yeah, well, a couple times in the past, I was told I was borderline. So what am I getting at? Holistic thinking would have us notice right away that the combination of high blood fats, high blood sugar, and it doesn't have to be high all the time. Not like these things all have to be abnormal all at once, but when they are, when you have high blood fats, high blood sugar, and high blood pressure, that is a holistic perspective, right? Because blood pressure, you know, could be part of any medical specialty, but my point is that, and then there's blood sugar, which usually dealt with the endocrinologist, the internist, and then there's the same thing for high blood pressure dealt with by this doctor too. If one doctor sees them all, they would call this metabolic syndrome or syndrome X. That is an example of holistic thinking in traditional medicine, which is a rarity. It's a rarity because intelligence, there's many types of intelligence, and the kinds of intelligence we need to really solve problems, in my humble opinion, in terms of healthcare these days, is we need to make sure that we have a holistic perspective, not just throwing that out there with lip service, but to really practice and think and approach things holistically, balancing all the nutrition. It's not enough for you to take all the nutrients. Not enough for you to take the right diet. It has to be balanced for your issues within a holistic perspective. So here's what I'm going to do. The next show, I'm going to talk about common health problems, heart disease, diabetes, headaches, all kinds of common things, pain, neuropathies, blood sugar problems, low thyroid problems, and how medicine would handle those, and how a truly holistic perspective would approach those problems, and then decide for yourself which makes most sense. So please send me other show topics to my email at my email is info@blooddetective.com. You can post your questions on my blog at www.integratednutritionny.com. For those of you who'd like to contact me to work with me, I'm happy to do that. My phone number is 914-242-8844. So join me for the next show, How to Approach Your Health Problems Holistically. Thank you so much for joining me, and I'll talk to you soon. Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. You Catholic girls start much too late. All the sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well be the one. Well, they show me.